Macro Voices is pleased to bring you this encore presentation of an interview which originally aired in full color video on Real Vision Television at an earlier date. Real Vision is a paid subscription video on demand channel for finance. In partnership with Real Vision Television, we are pleased to offer Macro Voices subscribers a free trial subscription to Real Vision. To sign up, go to realvisiontv.com/discount/Macro Voices. Macro Voices does not receive any commission or other compensation if you purchase a Real Vision subscription. We are proud to promote Real Vision because we believe they are the only other financial media outlet that shares our values and standards in financial journalism.
This is Aaron Chan of Macro Voices. For this week's Real Vision Television Encore presentation, we bring to you an interview which was originally published on April 14, 2016, with Roy Sabag and Josh Crum, co-founders of BitGold and current Chief Executive Officer and Chief Strategy Officer of Gold Money, respectively. Here at Macro Voices, we've had numerous requests for exploration into different technologies, be it Bitcoin, blockchain, or energy-backed currencies. As with many of our guests so far, gold has been a major topic of conversation as central banks around the world double down on quantitative easing and negative interest rates. So naturally, people are beginning to have legitimate concerns about keeping their money in the traditional financial system. I mean, we've all heard the stories of personal safes flying off of shelves in Germany and Japan, which is why I find a company like Gold Money to be so fascinating, because it straddles the tangible world of gold and the free-floating fiat world. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to take advantage of an exclusive 10% discount on RVTV subscriptions by signing up at realvisiontv.com/discount/macrovoices.
So my name is Roy Sabag. I'm the founder and CEO of Gold Money Inc., which is the parent company which owns BitGold Corp., which is the BitGold.com platform, as well as the Gold Money business, which we acquired in May of 2015. BitGold.com is essentially a savings and payments platform powered by gold bullion. So it's essentially a fully reserved, fully redeemable, fully insured gold-backed digital ledger. Where customers, users can make a deposit of any fiat currency, converting that fiat currency into a weight of gold, which sits at a vault that is custodied by Brinks in one of 9 locations around the world. That weight of gold can then be used in any form that they're customarily familiar with, such as making a payment. That gold weight can be sent to anyone through the internet, through an email or an SMS. That gold weight can be used to be spent at a traditional point of sale from a MasterCard that we give them. So you could go to a local ATM machine, withdraw the value of that weight of gold in any local currency, or you could go to any merchant that accepts MasterCard and essentially consume that weight of gold by liquidating it instantly and then into a fiat currency, which is then used to pay for the product or service. For a merchant, the platform is very unique because it allows them to open an account with a zero balance and use the platform's capabilities to process a transaction for their goods or services. And so they're indirectly able to tap into all these processing mechanisms that we've incorporated into the platform. If you're a merchant that can't accept credit cards, you can accept credit cards indirectly with BitGold. If you're a merchant that doesn't accept Bitcoin, you can accept Bitcoin indirectly. If you're a merchant that is sending an invoice to a counterparty that maybe is located in a jurisdiction where the currency is very volatile, you can use BitGold to remove that volatility from your transaction while simultaneously storing your surplus in gold. So it really is this concept of a gold-backed payments and savings platform. We tried to emulate what PayPal was doing in the closed-loop nature so that it would have a lot more consumer protections than say something like cryptocurrency or a Bitcoin. But at the same time, our ideological box was not so much decentralization of the ecosystem, but rather using a decentralized commodity money in the form of gold. And so that's really what BitGold is.
My name is Josh Crum, and I am the co-founder of BitGold and the Chief Strategy Officer of Gold Money Inc. For me, the you know, the reason that Roy and I started BitGold was really looking at a world that that savings, money and savings is becoming, you know, a significant question. You know, if you look at you know, all of the central bank policies that were designed to create growth on a temporary basis, we've now lived 7 years without interest rates. You know, where you're not able to actually save, you know, in increasingly rising prices of the things you need to save for. So, you know, in a lot of the economic commentary, they talk about savings as hoarding, as something bad, that's bad for the economy, bad. But, you know, are you hoarding for education? We're in a knowledge-based economy that needs education, that needs things that require savings. Are you hoarding for healthcare when you're older? We're in an aging society. You know, are you hoarding for, you know, to have a big family meal and gathering, you know, with, you know, food prices going up? And so really this you know, kind of this concept of money holding value is not, you know, is not present in our current financial system. And I think that's, you know, for people that understand finance and can always stay ahead, always can borrow, buy assets, that's not a problem. And it's actually been incredible. The rich, you know, are just getting richer because of this system. However, if I've got an extra, you know, $100 a month, that I just want to hold in a checking account, and again try to build some savings over time, and I don't have time to you know, have a broker, or you know, I haven't got into the real estate market before it took off. You know, how do I catch up? You know, and you know, with money that's going down, and you know, that was fine when at least you got paid interest, when at least your interest can compound over time. So for us, it was really, you know, how do we help solve for that on a major scale? You know, people that are wealthy that understand gold can already buy gold. You know, you can buy an ETF. You know, we think we have a superior product, but you know, this is really, we really built the platform for someone that wants to buy $20 a month in gold, and that's been very difficult. You know, again, in this world of trying to save $100 a month, you know, you got to save for a year to buy a gold coin, and by then the gold coin has already gone up in value. So we wanted to create a technology where anyone at any level in any place in the world could just average in over time. And if you look at the math of gold, that's when it works best, is when you average in over time, not make a big bet like, you know, this month or the Fed's going to do this, I'm going to buy gold. You know, I just don't think we can control for all the variables in the macro economy. I think if you're just on a weekly, on a daily, on a monthly basis, just putting some of your savings, just like you did with your checking account, into gold, I think the math of that function shows that it's always worked anywhere in the world. So we really were focused on a technology for savings, not for investing, but for savings. And that's, you know, that's really what drove us.
So the big challenge for me was when I discovered the attributes of gold, what made gold gold, it immediately became clear to me that gold was a currency. It wasn't an investable asset. It wasn't an asset that you incorporate into your portfolio or rotate into from equities or bonds, which is really what the avant-garde kind of thought leaders in gold have tried to prescribe it as. You know, the math of gold was working, and so the investment industry had manufactured products with gold that they could sell and generate fees off of. When you look at gold's volatility, it's really a currency. In fact, it's one of the least volatile currencies. And so my view was that there should be some type of a platform that allows gold to be used as a currency. And I never really understood or realized how many different use cases there could be. Or the actual value proposition that would emanate from this technology. All I knew was that, you know, I personally wanted to have my assets, my capital, in a financial service institution that was fully reserved and fully gold-backed. And I basically went about it in a very brute force way to just build a technology that wouldn't, you know, in Canada, there's a saying, skating to where the puck's headed. That's what everyone else is doing in fintech. We had to build something where today, gold today could be integrated and interoperable with the existing rails, existing financial system rails. So we had to make gold work with MasterCard. We had to make gold work with Swift. We had to make gold work with any bank, any ACH or SEPA, UnionPay. And so that's what we did. And as a result of doing that, we've discovered all these incredible use cases that we never could have imagined, that people all of a sudden recognize that it's cheaper to use our platform to move, say, $1 across the Atlantic Ocean. How do you move a dollar? You know, say you owe someone $1 and they live in Europe, so it's 90 euros, 90 cent euros. How do you do that today? You actually can't do that. And if you try to do that, your processing costs will be in excess of the value of that transaction. But with our platform, you can move $1 into 90 cent euros at a 1% cost. If you compare our platform to something like TransferWise, which is gaining a lot of momentum and a lot of hype, the minimum fee on TransferWise is 5 euros. So if you move 100 euros, you're paying 5%. In our platform, you could move 62 cents. You could move 200 euros, and you're always paying that flat 1% fee. And again, the reason for this is that our ledger itself is backed by gold bullion. So whenever the gold is either being acquired or liquidated, it's being done in a market where the counterparty on the other end is discovering the price in that local fiat currency. And so it's outside the banking system entirely. There's none of that friction. It's essentially an order book that's being discovered in a physical market, but that we are able to batch for our retail users in a way that's very simple, very simple user experience. It reminds them of something that maybe would be like a PayPal. Yeah, so maybe in the souk it's illiquid and there are wide bid offer spreads, but in the kind of well-articulated, well-established LBMA/COMEX markets, physical gold is actually quite deep and quite liquid and spreads are very tight. In fact, they're tighter than many exotic fiat currency spreads. So it was really a matter of taking that existing market and digitizing it and also making it ubiquitous and available to anyone. And that's where the batch process is very important, which is what our technology Aurum does, which is how you're able to take, say, 62 cents from your MasterCard and gain access to a serialized vaulted piece of metal. But in fact, the gold market is very deep. It's very liquid, the physical gold market. And we have never really seen any indications that there is an issue with supply of physical metal. What we've seen is that the investment demand thus far has come from securitized vehicles. And I think that's what we're trying to change. If we do our job correctly, there will not be an ETF in 10 years. There's no reason why people should gain access to gold through an ETF. It makes no sense. Gold should be a savings product that you gain access to through a retail banking branch if you decide to bank with a bank or through some type of a fully reserved platform like what we have. It really negates the concept of gold to own it in a securitized vehicle. So I think that ultimately what we've done really well is taken kind of that all that really that conjecture around gold and the opacity of how the market actually functions and simplified it. We don't show a bidder offer, we show a mid price, and we make you think about gold and gold grams, which to me is psychologically more digestible. A troy ounce, what is a troy ounce? Go try to figure that one out. Try to explain that one to a layman. So a gram is very, very simple to understand. And a mid price is something that many people can understand very quickly. And once they purchase it, they don't really want to pay a storage fee. So we built a business model where we charge a little bit more per transaction. We charge 1% on each side, but we don't charge a storage fee. So we incentivize people to think about gold and increase the velocity for gold. Since gold became kind of a ubiquitous tool in portfolio management over the last cycle, the last bull market cycle, people's relationship with gold has been really two-directional. They either buy it or they sell it, and in between it kind of gathers dust and they store it. And so I think the big problem that we're solving is making gold useful again. In between the buying and the selling, you can actually transact with the gold, you can use the gold. And that's very important because kind of echoing what I said earlier, that returns gold to where its place, you know, the place that it had in history. It never occupied this investment place. It was never something that was supposed to make you rich. It was simply supposed to protect your purchasing power at a moment in time and space. And that's, I think, the other really, really interesting thing that we're doing at BitGold. And I think one of the reasons we've been so successful is we've kind of identified a gap in the thought leadership with respect to the narrative around gold. The narrative was very heavy on the emotive politics, the fear and the greed, the end of the world aspects. And I think that we went into this for whatever reasons. Maybe it's due to our upbringing, or maybe it's due to the fact that we're somewhat socially liberal. But we went into this saying, we're going to build this entirely based on mathematics and physics and science. And we're going to show people why using first principles or while focusing entirely on natural systems, so not even on economics, you would want to use gold as a medium of exchange and store of value. And it's been hugely successful. You know, 70% of the people that buy physical gold on the platform have never in their lives bought gold. And I used to say the stat was about 50%, but then we actually went down, did the research, we found that it's 70%. So we're expanding the category entirely. We're introducing a new use case for gold using the gold, and we're doing it very rapidly.
I think what's interesting, again, is this concept of money, just like everything that technology is doing. You know, when communication becomes so fast and data and processing becomes so fast, I think it causes us to question a lot of technologies. And if you think about this technology called money, you know, it's a very specific kind of commodity for a very specific purpose. I always like the you know, when someone says, you know, I don't buy gold because it's useless. You know, I can't heat my house with gold. I can't eat gold when I'm hungry. And I said, oh, really? You know, when was the last time you ate a $100 bill? You know, commodities, you know, money is a specific commodity called an intermediate commodity. It's actually something that's made to last. That's all money's function is supposed to be at its core. I mean, sure, you know, money should be a you know, store of value, also a medium of exchange, something that's always liquid, a unit of account, something to measure other things. But ultimately, the core function of money is to last. So if you think of a commodity that's that's made to last, and you look all through the periodic table, there's one that lasts the best, that doesn't corrode, that doesn't oxidize, that you could drop in the bottom of the ocean, you know, for 5,000 years and it hasn't changed, and that's gold. And so gold actually evolved as money, as a commodity, independently of any sort of economic theory. It just as a commodity circulated, and we tried all sorts of things, that's the one that lasts the most. Now, in many countries where that, you know, where maybe that resource, maybe gold or silver or other you know, noble metals that last weren't as abundant, you know, people got quite innovative and they tried to mimic that property by paying interest, by creating circles of, you know, sort of concentric circles of debt that achieved something very similar, and that you're at least paid a real interest rate to you know, that basically money can hold value where everything else decays at a certain rate. You know, your energy, your oil, your, you know, energy evaporates, you know, your metals rust, and that all comes at a rate. But if you have an interest rate at that level, then these, you know, this commodity called, you know, fiat currency or debt could circulate and last as well. So where I'm going with all that is, you think about you know, new commodities like Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is a commodity, but again, so is money. Money is a commodity, and what Bitcoin does, which is very interesting, is it tries to mimic the properties of gold in its very difficult marginal cost to create. And instead of you know, the way that the gold is mined and processed, as they're mining this Bitcoin, they're actually providing a payment utility for the entire network as well. And I think it's very interesting. And I think it's really changed people's understanding of money and how we can use other commodities as money, you know, particularly in a world without interest rates or without real interest rates. And so from that standpoint, I think it's revolutionary. It's really making everyone think about what is money. However, as a commodity itself, there's you know a few things that define a commodity and define good money. And we thought about this a lot. You know, we spent a lot of time in Bitcoin. We were making actually a system that was very interoperable between gold and Bitcoin because, you know, it's like having, you know, silver and gold or water and oil. Like, you know, you don't have to pick one. You know, different commodities have different utility. But ultimately, that core function of being a store of value that lasts, not just the medium exchange properties, is what led us to question whether Bitcoin could ever scale and be useful as a low volatility storage of value. And ultimately, we came to the conclusion that we don't think it will. You know, I think there's a lot of interesting use cases, and maybe we'll be proven wrong. But what we know now is that gold does work, and it, you know, whether it was, you know, backing, you know, government money or whatever else, the math of gold lasting never changes. That's just physics. That's not economics. And so if we could create a system to use something that lasts, it'll be very good for savers. And that's kind of how we think about, you know, commodity money. This other concept of you know, again, back to the concept of money and what lasts. If you think about, let's see how to say it. You know, essentially there's a whole spectrum of commodities, and what, you know, what I like to call stock commodities or capex commodities like metals. This is something that you can produce once and you can use over and over, whether it's in physical infrastructure or it's money and gold. And then at the other end of the spectrum are the OPEX or the, you know, the flow commodities. And that's things that are very hard to store, things like electricity, things like oil. You know, going through that commodity spectrum and thinking how we, you know, every part of our economy from, you know, all of our heating and housing and, you know, the big parts, you know, the white goods and the capex goods and then, you know, trade and all of the energy that takes trade. You know, there's a significant proportion of our economy will always be based in those natural systems and based in those you know, primary industries like mining, fishing, forestry, energy extraction, metal extraction. And then you have the service industries and the tertiary industries that sit on top of that creates, you know, networks of distribution and marketing and advertising and buying this good and versus this and all the services that try to differentiate those underlying commodities. But again, you can always bring back the spectrum to, you know, the flow and hard to store parts of the economy and energy and the very easy to store parts in metals. Where something like Bitcoin becomes very interesting is because it's a distributed network of information. But the problem is its mining cost and its utility is very tied to the service industry and very tied to the information side, and not the capex, you know, sort of, you know, metal side. So I think its utility will always be volatile based on flows of information and things happening in the economy. And its mining cost is essentially a function of energy and processing power that's again tied to the flow in the economy, not the stock in the economy. So you know, again, I think it has some very interesting use cases, but it will fundamentally always be volatile. And so you know, that's why we really focused on gold, on a lot of the interesting use cases of Bitcoin as a global, you know, sort of decentralized currency. But do that with a gold platform rather than a commoditized, you know, information token.
It's impossible in any complex system, you know, to presuppose what's going to happen. Your job in product development or software engineering is to create the best platform you can and make it a sort of a canvas and let people express themselves the way they want. So I think that, you know, we have an auto distributor in New Zealand and he is used to exporting auto products to an auto dealer in Trinidad and Tobago. And, you know, we see them engaging in these transactions and, you know, they're tens of thousands of dollars. And so we called them and we wanted to know what the heck was going on. And the guy in Trinidad was saying, you know, the guy in New Zealand needs to get NZD. And the guy in Trinidad, you know, they have their dollar pegged currency, but in reality, his bank screws him because when the guy from NZD converts to USD wires to the Trinidad bank, you know, the bank takes a little bit of a fee. It's like, you know, in the Caymans or in Bahamas where there's a dollar pegged currency, but when you actually have a local currency denominated account, they ding you. And so what they started doing was the guy in New Zealand opened a BitGold account and the guy in Trinidad uses his Visa card and makes a deposit using Visa. So he even has access to credit this way, sends the gold to the guy in New Zealand. And the guy in New Zealand doesn't even redeem the gold. He keeps it in gold weight and then has his own card. And the next time he needs to pay for expenses in New Zealand, he pays for it with his gold card, liquidating just the right amount of gold into NZD at the spot price. So that's one use case that I mentioned because it's one I never could have thought of. You know, we have a client in Canada who has a daughter that goes to school in the UK and a son that goes to school in Asia. And he opened accounts for each of them, sent them each their prepaid cards, makes a deposit once a month with his credit card, sends them a recurring payment, because you can set that. And then you can also set the account to automatically redeem the gold value into the card at a specific percentage of the vault. So, you know, the kids never have to log into BitGold. He never has to log into BitGold. The whole thing's totally automated. But as a result, his daughter in the UK, who can't open a bank account in the UK, she doesn't have a social security number there, so a health insurance number. And the son, you know, good luck opening a bank account in Asia. And so she has a British pounds card and the son has a US dollar card. And he's using gold as a conduit for these transactions. And as a result, saving himself, you know, he told me when I called him to ask about this, that they're saving between 5% and 10%. And he's sending them, you know, $50,000 a year, basically, each. So, you know, it's serious money. And so these are use cases I never could have imagined. You know, we have a guy in Argentina who basically sells goods and services online. And this is his way of basically invoicing, sending a request payment. People from all over the world that buy his goods or services are able to open an account, swipe their credit card or fund their account, and he keeps all of his gold in London. So it's outside of the grasp of Fernandez, or although now it's Macris, who's actually much better. But you know, there's so many use cases like that. We're seeing you know, thousands of people sign up every day. We're seeing a real network effect emerging, and we haven't even launched merchant accounts. So there really is no framework for a business today to even use BitGold. People are hacking the system by opening personal accounts and, you know, putting different names under first and last, or just using the personal account name to engage in business transactions. We've had attempts at abusing the system, either for the purpose of abusing some of our bonus programs, which we have, or to engage in fraud or money laundering. But we have a very holistic AML and KYC process, and we report to the local regulator here in suspicious transaction reports and or elevated OFAC FinCEN reports. So, I mean, we haven't had $1 of value stolen from us or our clients. We've always protected our clients. That's really the benefit of having a closed loop system. But we're very proactive on this. So a lot of people will actually complain, especially people from the cryptocurrency world, that we're very draconian. But our approach is not to lose $1 of value. And so we ask for a lot of information. You know, we ask for your personal ID. We may ask for further verification of your ID. We may even ask for source of wealth if we see certain trends with respect to the transactions. But the bottom line is that for a fully transparent client, we provide them with the only way to essentially live outside the banking system and be exposed to this metal at an extremely low cost, whilst simultaneously being able to do everything they're used to doing, whether it's getting paid their wage or consuming in the financial system. And so there's been some attempts, but I think that, you know, from a cybersecurity perspective, we're so incredibly powerful. You know, our CTO is a former hacker and spent the majority of his career in encryption and data protection storage. So, you know, we welcome hacking attempts. We've had a few attempts. They haven't even come close. We even hire third-party penetration experts. We've had a few very high-level discussions with financial institutions. And before they even spoke to us, they said, you know, you have to hire this expert and this expert and this expert and spend 50 grand and see if they can penetrate your system. And we did it about two times already. And I mean, they couldn't even come close. You know, we use all best standards and we push code out every week. So we're updating the technology. You know, the second there's a vulnerability that's discovered in any of our systems, we patch it up and we put it out. And also BitGold users will notice that the system tends to update a lot. So on the cybersecurity front, you know, we're doing anything that, you know, beyond best practices. On the actual value destruction or loss of value or AML, we're more proactive, I'd say, than even PayPal. When we started this business, we had both done well in our previous careers, and we wanted to basically do this as almost like a for-purpose venture. It was, you know, I'm not going to say philanthropic, but it was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, almost like a hobby. And I never imagined in my wildest dreams that so many people would be interested in this idea, even just in terms of investors, and we'd be able to raise all this capital. But more importantly, I never imagined that it would be kind of so ubiquitous. So many different people would recognize the value of doing this and enjoy the experience. And so we've been very empowered by this. And so we feel like we have a tiger by the tail, so to speak. And so that's why, you know, I'm only getting 20 hours of week sleep a week. And I'm working. So I've never worked this hard in the hedge fund ever. I mean, you know, it was totally different. It was me and the computer and maybe two analysts. But this is really hard work. And the reason we work so hard and we're not really even thinking about it as work is because we get motivated by the growth and all the different ideas. And so I think where we're going to take this now is it's going to become a formalized financial institution in the sense that anything that you're accustomed to doing with your bank, you're eventually going to be able to do with BitGold. You know, we don't want to just issue debit cards. We want to issue credit cards. We don't want to just be involved in savings and payments. We are going to want to be involved in wealth management. We're not going to just want to be involved in wealth management, but also in lending. I think that anything that your bank is doing for you today, in a few years, BitGold or gold money will do for you. And really just doubling down on that ethos of fully reserved gold-backed financial institution. We have to take a step back and look at the macro backdrop. We're basically at zero interest rates heading towards negative. And so there really is no point as a financial institution to gather deposits and then lend them out and take risk under a fractional reserve basis. There's never been a better opportunity in the history of banking or economics or finance to start what's known as a fully reserved securitized lending business, in the sense that you may have $100,000 in your BitGold account and you may want to borrow $50,000 or $60,000 against that. We would never engage in fractionally reserving a deposit. So I do want to be clear on that. But there are many, many reasons, especially tax reasons, that you would want to tap into your existing gold position as collateral to buy a house or to take a business loan. And I think that what that ultimately leads to, which is something we're also going to be working on, is the ability to securitize those loans into what are known as gold bonds. And there haven't been gold bonds in many, many years. And I don't even know of any fixed income manager that wouldn't want to buy gold bonds where you're buying a weight of gold with an interest rate on the weight. So it's essentially a much better version of the TIPS bond without a manipulated index, right? So there are ways, but we would only do it. So again, we're not looking to start a financial service institution that has a 20 times leverage to equity ratio. We're looking to stay within that core ethos of fully reserved. You know, we would have the best capital ratio in the world. But there is an opportunity today, I think, and we've been saying this for years, to essentially have a financial service relationship with your customer where you say, look, you're going to use us for all these services, and we're going to charge you an upfront custody fee. And that's the only way we're going to make money on you. And we're not going to, and what you know is that at this financial institution, the value that you've deposited is allocated to you, reserved to you, redeemable to you. In this case, it would literally be in a serialized vaulted piece of metal. But I think that's skating to where the puck's headed. I don't think there's any reason why a logical person would want to have a deposit at a fractionally reserved institution and pay a negative interest rate. It just seems crazy. At the least, if you're going to pay any negative drag, then you want to know that it's fully reserved. And so I think that's really the chink in the armor of the incumbent financial institutions. And we've just scratched the surface of this with BitGold and gold money. But I think that if we take a risk on this and make a big bet on it, it could pay off very handsomely.